From the Space Cave, it's your old pal David Huntsberger, and today the Space Cave looks a lot like a wood shop where you'd come to make things out of wood, out of sanders and little jigsaws, a lathe. It's quiet, old tools with a feel like they've been handled for ages. The wood's really worn in and smooth, and a lot of cobwebs, and it's a pretty peaceful, serene little environment. So bring yourself here if you'd like, or remain in your place where you are currently, and tune your ears to some conversations, some check-ins, some music later. Before we get started, a big thanks to Nicholas Zinda. I don't know if he wanted me to say his name or not, but our very first sponsor of the show donated some money, so today's beer, although it was brought up by the guests, is in some way something he did to help the show. Maybe it's the next episode. That beer will be purchased by Nicholas. So thanks a lot for that. I really appreciate it. It helps with keeping the show up and running. So thanks for that, Nicholas. Yeah, let's start right now and check in with a citizen in the world.
Hello?
Hi, is this RJ?
Yeah, is this David?
It is. How's it going?
It's all right, man. How are you?
Good, good. I like your Twitter handle, at Cabbage Tits.
Yeah, I haven't had a Twitter for that long, but yours was one of the first ones I followed.
Oh, well, thanks, man. I guess I should follow you. Was it just, do you have smelly, cabbagey breasts, or is it more of, that was one of the few handles still remaining?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to show you to really, you know, verify that, but I don't know. I don't think they're that cabbagey.
Not too cabbagey. Enough to be named so for the internet, but not in real life. 801, you're in Salt Lake, is that right?
Yeah, I'm close to there.
Oh, okay. Well, if I'm ever through that area, maybe I'll have a look. Maybe have a gander at them.
Yeah, that would be an experience, if nothing else.
I just swing through just for enough time to have you lift up your shirt. All right. Thanks, and then head on out.
You can just like drive by or something.
Well, you're in that. What do you do? What's going on in the world? What's got you transfixed, interested, frustrated, excited? What's going on?
Oh, I don't know. I recently took a job as a janitor at a high school because I had to take a semester off at college for financial reasons, and I need money so I can get back there this spring semester. And yeah, it's just been an interesting experience because going back to high school. It's interesting being there and looking in on it from the outside, because when I was just I haven't been out of high school that long, just a couple years now.
Oh, okay.
And when I was there, I was sort of trapped in that whole system. And now I get to sort of just look outside and harshly judge everybody from that viewpoint.
That might not be healthy for your psyche to be. I mean, you paint a picture of this character kind of pushing by, you know, the mop bucket, and then sinisterly having these angry thoughts about the kids.
Well, yeah, no, and they're never that angry. It's always just, you know, me kind of laughing at the fallacies of youth, I guess.
Yeah.
When I say youth, I'm only like 2 years older than some of these kids.
Yeah, I did that right after I got out of college. I mean, not as a janitor, but like went back to high school campuses as a substitute. And it was strange to walk around and be like, I didn't feel that much older than them, but they looked suddenly like way younger, and then just their actions and mannerisms and everything. You really get a sense like how much development happens for people at that age.
It's interesting, because I'll be talking with one of my friends who's working there with me. It's kind of how I ended up with that job, and we'll refer to them as children, and we would have hated that when we were in high school, having people call us children.
I feel like I was one of the youngest people to ever refer to people slightly younger than me as young man and young lady. Because I didn't really know how else to address them. You know, they're basically my age, but I had to be in this position of like, hey, no running, young man. It felt ridiculous, but also pretty fun.
Yeah, it's the same way. We have to tell the kids to get to class if they're roaming the halls when they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And it feels a little wrong. I mean, I was in high school. I get it. I rarely went to class.
So you're just going to do this for a little while until you can save up enough to go back in the spring full time to school, or are you going to keep doing it?
No, just enough so I can save up and go back to school this January.
Oh.
I'm almost there, but it was just a little too much for this one.
I see. And you have access, I guess, to a world that everyone's familiar with, and yet your perspective of it is different. Are you jotting down notes? Are you having ideas for like a book or a short story or anything to take away from it?
I'm not really sure. I've never really thought about writing a book. But
write that book!
the experiences, the life and times of RJ as a janitor, that'd be...
Old Cabbage Tits the janitor, just keeping
real,
that place
real
sparkling.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear the story of the guy who was, I believe he worked at a middle school for like 30 years as a janitor, and then he passed away, and they, was it his house or like a storage unit or something, they found like hundreds of paintings. He was just like a brilliant painter. He would go home at night and just paint. He used like all of his money that he made on art supplies and just painted. I probably should look up that story and find it definitively. I've only seen it in print. I remember it at a school I was working at that it might have even been one of the schools that he worked at. But it just seems so romantic that he just loved to paint, and he just had to have a job so that he could afford to do it. And then as soon as he wasn't at that job, he was just painting. I don't know. When I think of janitors, I think of that now a lot.
Yeah, I've never heard that. That's kind of fascinating. I'm a big fan of that concept that, you know, there are these guys, these people out there who just sort of do art for the sake of doing it, not really because they're trying to get anywhere with it, but almost because they have to. I may be romanticizing it a bit, but I think that's really, really neat.
You heard it here first, folks. I think that's really neat. No, I do too. I think that it's something so like refreshing about it, because so many people, especially, you know, kind of the art school kids and stuff, I can't work. I'm an artist. I've got to devote all my time to being creative. And I think, like, if you're really an artist, you'll find ways to do it in spite of jobs or whatever else gets in your way. And to me, like, not that that's the only way to do it, the way that guy did it just on his own, but there's something very genuine about it where no one would question why that person did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know, I kind of aspire to be that kind of person, and I'm just not sure that I'll ever have that in me, but I'm still young. We'll see.
What medium or what genre of artistic pursuits do you mean by that?
Well, I write a bit of music.
Oh, okay.
I'm really into that. I've considered trying a bit of stand-up comedy. I think I'm going to wait a little bit, at least finish my associate's degree before really pursuing that.
It is one of the prerequisites to doing comedy, is you got to have that associate's locked
down. And then just never use it, right?
Yeah. You should contribute a song for the show. We play music at the end of the episode. If you ever get anything down that you like, send it my way.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll think about that. I'll see what I can make happen.
Okay. Cabbage Tits the janitor goes home at night, holes away in his studio, writes music. There's something there. That's kind of a cool story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm not sure how some of my bosses would think of Cabbage Tits the janitor, but
see what they think about changing your name tag, if they'll go for it.
Yeah. But you know, I pluck away at that guitar, find little melodies. It's a good time. It's really almost meditative sometimes.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I'm not very good at it, but I use it just for that, just to kind of like calm myself or, no, that sounds dumb. But you know, yeah, probably the same thing you're doing. It just kind of like zones me out a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of, I don't know. I hate the term magical, but it really just sort of pulls me away from everything, and I can just sort of, you know, be in my own world and, you know, create this thing that I don't really play much of my music for anyone because I'm not really that into that. But, you know, maybe someday I'll see if I can make a living off of it. It's certainly, I'm not planning on majoring in music.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you, yeah, not wanting to play it for anybody, at least straight away, you've got all the makings of a secret janitor, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm rooting for you to, whatever life holds out ahead of you, I hope it works out positively, and I'm glad you tweeted in your number.
Yeah, thanks, man. I hope it all works out for me, too, I guess.
All right, and thanks.
I'm really digging the new podcast. I hope that really works out for you.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been fun to do. So hopefully be able to keep it moving along. I've enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
All right, sweet. Well, yeah. I'll talk to you down the road and find out what happened in the life of RJ quotes Cabbage Tits, the janitor. Hopefully you're the musician by then. But I'll talk to you at a future date.
Absolutely. See you then.
All right. Thanks, RJ. Bye.
Bye.
So, RJ the janitor, what does the future hold for him? We'll have to check back down the road and see what his janitoring days laid out ahead for him. Hopefully a successful music career and get real successful on songs about metaphorically cleaning up after things. I don't know. Well, you probably noticed on the... if you'd like to call in, the best way to do that is just follow the show on Twitter, which is space_cave, and then every now and then they're periodically tweets saying, hey, send in your number. And so thanks to the people who've been doing that. It's been a unique experience. And you probably noticed on the title for the show that the guests today work in cancer research, and which can be a touchy subject, obviously, and there can, you know, it's a difficult thing to broach. And I initially recorded this segment of the show with the idea of putting some positive thoughts out into the world for my friend Andy Ritchie, who was struggling with brain cancer. And in the interim between that and then before the show could go out, he passed away, which is, I'm still having a hard time getting my head around. And a lot of times that's the way cancer works, where you see somebody and it's, you know, a year ago he was, you know, himself, lively, and still trying to figure out. The doctors weren't exactly sure what it was, and going in for a lot of tests, and then pretty quickly things didn't go great. And so if you're not familiar with Andy Ritchie, he has a CD called King Ding-a-Ling. Anytime anyone ever asks me what CDs they should check out that they might not have been familiar with, I always reference that one. It's so good, phenomenally good. And he was the first person I asked to do the Junk Show. I just thought he was really underappreciated and not as well known as he should have been, and just a really funny, great, nice fella. I met him in Austin. If you look online, there's a thing on YouTube where he kind of used to do this interview series that I'm on it. He's one of those guys. I worked at the comedy club. I had seen him before, so I was kind of a fan, even though he wasn't a household name. He hadn't been on TV, anything like that. And the staff at a comedy club is usually pretty discerning, because you see everyone come through. Almost every night of the week, there's a different act coming through, and a lot of times they're big famous people, and you might peek your head out like, whoa, look who I'm checking out there. This is someone I saw in movies when I was a kid. And a lot of times they're not all that great. The crowd's there and it's sold out, but their act might be a little stale, or, you know, they're kind of out of touch because they've been rich and successful for a long time. And then every now and again someone comes through who you go, who's that? You've never heard of them. They haven't been on TV. And Andy was one of those guys from Minneapolis who came down and was just blew everyone away. We would all sneak out and watch his entire act when we could every night, because there weren't huge crowds, so we weren't real busy in the kitchen. But he was just unbelievably good, and so I always thought it was, I don't know, I just felt really fortunate that he later, you know, became my friend and was complimentary of my comedy as well, and I felt like that was kind of the biggest not validation, but I don't know, it's just a good feeling that someone you consider so funny also liked you. And and not to bring it down too much, but he's just, if you get a chance, check out King Ding-a-Ling. And like I say, talking about cancer is not easy. It in certain parts of the episode might be difficult, especially if you know someone who's going through that. My friend Jamie, a college friend and an old roommate of mine, is in the middle of a battle as well. So maybe we can focus some Space Cave energy her way. Ryan, who we did that for, got a job in the Pacific Northwest, if you remember that call-in. He is now currently gainfully employed. I've tried to call him a couple times to hear more details about it, but I've missed him, so we'll keep trying to catch back up with him. But so maybe it works, guys. Maybe this positive energy, let's focus that toward my friend Jamie, and hopefully if you have friends out there as well, we can avoid having this bad news delivered to us, because it doesn't feel great. And so part of that is learning, I guess, what cancer is, what we know about it, how can we can defend ourselves from this stupid thing. And so this episode is, and I probably bring up Andy in that at some point, because it was weird throughout his whole process. They weren't exactly sure what it was a lot of the time. So I'd check in with him and be like, yeah, they're still kind of getting a grasp on it. And anyway, I don't want to bring it down too much. I hope that's not too sad, but I just want to give a little tip of the cap to my friend Andy Ritchie, and gonna miss that dude. But let's move ahead and see if we can figure out something about cancer and how we can keep more of our friends around going forward. So these are two people who drove up from Irvine, Katie and Heather, and you'll hear all about their research, and they were nice enough to bring their own beer. So this is us having some Victoria Ale from Allagash Brewing, which is pretty good, and they're just delightful. So I think if you're a little bummed out right now, you'll get pepped back up in spite of the fact that we are talking about cancer research. Here is Katie Sanders and Heather Wright from Irvine. It's a good test for me as a sound recording person.
Yeah.
Try to figure it out.
Yeah. Engineering.
Well, you guys made it in an hour and a half.
Yeah.
That's good. Drove up from Irvine. You're living on campus and you are studying. I don't think you sent me a link as, like, if you did, I apologize, to exactly what you're studying.
Or No, I didn't.
That's okay. But we'll learn together. So I don't. I feel bad if I'm ever like, what are you doing? Like, I say
No, it's fine. We don't expect.
When I heard cancer research, obviously, like, the first thing is it's like, ooh, that is a touchy subject. But second is sort of anytime anyone is doing anything remotely inconsequential and someone is being too serious for it, someone will snidely go, hey, come on, we're not curing cancer here.
That's true. You hear that often.
So it allows that you guys could just be jerks all the time if you want to. We're curing cancer here.
Well, yeah, that's a big statement even for a cancer researcher. But yeah, usually it's like, we hope to contribute to better treatments for cancer rather than curing it. But yes, that's true.
And surprisingly, most of the people we work with are very nice.
Katie Sanders and Heather Wright.
Yes. Hello. Yeah.
Hello.
From UC Irvine. You said the Anteaters?
Yes, we are the Anteaters.
And what type of beer did you bring? I haven't even tried it yet, so let me do that.
I haven't either.
You guys were...
Yeah, try it.
You guys were... I don't want to say adamant, but you were very much like, we're bringing our own beer. And I was I thought that was sort of a nice gesture. I was like, you don't have to. But I thought that was really sweet. I appreciate it.
We're happy to be here. And so, yeah, we wanted to bring some, brought a nice little variety. This one is from Allagash Brewery. It's called Victoria Ale.
Ooh, okay.
And it's got some green grapes in it.
Yeah.
Green grapes. I was going to say it's very floral, but maybe that's the wrong word because... grapes are not particularly
you probably know more
floral.
About beer than I do.
I don't really. And that's not a descriptive thing I would usually say about beer, like, oh, it's floral, but
it's
that's the first
nice
thing I And I am drinking it out of this what do they call these,
fancy glass?
It's like a snifter almost.
That sounds kinda, good.
So it really does capture all of the smell, drives it right into your nose.
Nice.
And it's I think my brain is tracking in a weird way. Allagash, and then what is it?
What's Victoria Ale.
Victoria Ale. I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah.
Fits the temperature well. It's nighttime as we record this.
Yes.
Got the lights in here kind of low, not in a seductive way, just doing some screen printing things that make that kind of a requirement. But I feel like it fits the mood of talking about cancer, and this is a positive way to talk about cancer, because you guys are on the frontier of actually maybe solving it or getting a little bit of progress. So this doesn't
learning
feel like
more about it.
Learning more about it. Yeah. But that can only lead to, it's like if you learn about an opponent, you know its weaknesses.
Yes, exactly. And hopefully leading to some sort of improvement in treatment. That's the goal.
Okay, well, what are you studying? What are you learning? And before we get into what you think might happen, what are you learning? What can you tell me about cancer?
Yeah, so this is Katie, and I'm studying microRNA, which are these little molecules that have become more and more important over the last decade. They were only discovered a couple, like 20 years ago. And I'm looking at particular microRNAs in lung cancer.
MicroRNAs?
Yeah, microRNA.
Is it RNA, like the letters?
Yes.
MicroRNA, like so DNA?
Like messenger RNA,
okay.
Like DNA. Yeah, so they were discovered to play a role in gene regulation. So the way that your cells are expressing your genes, you know, has always been DNA to RNA to protein. That's the central dogma of molecular biology. And they discovered that microRNA go back and regulate mRNA, messenger RNA, turning them off, changing the expression of proteins, and changing what that cell is going to do.
Because if I can follow that, and I apologize if I rarely do, once it gets into like molecules and RNA and messengers, and I just don't understand it on a fundamental level. I mean, I kind of loosely get it, and it seems like this assembly line and kind of building blocks and pairing things up. But that seems to be the hardest thing to fight in cancer, is we've associated with like, cancer is the enemy, this bastard cancer, as if it like crawls into your systems, like, I live here now.
Yeah.
But in actuality, it's your own genetic
It's your own system. Cells. That's what's so hard. That's what's so crazy about cancer. It's your own cells kind of turning against you and just deciding they're going to continue growing forever.
Why do treatments then work sometimes? You hear things like, oh, they're using shark cartilage, or they... And that's something I heard when I was 10. I think I read it, maybe not that young, but I remember thinking that was the future. There was something they
shark
had figured
cartilage.
Out.
Shark cartilage?
Yeah, it was probably the first sort of snake oil thing that you always hear something, and I think we imagine that there's some foreign root, like in the Amazon or something like that.
Yeah.
We're gonna take that, and wasn't Medicine Man about that, or that Sean Connery movie where he lives way out in the jungle? I think maybe that's what put that in my head.
Okay, well, that sounds cool. Hey, you never know where you're gonna get.
But is it what you eat? Is it? I know that a friend of mine has brain cancer right now, and he's sort of like, I think it's from drinking diet soda. I used to drink a ton of it, and that could...
Interesting.
Well, diet is a factor, but just like, you know, a million other things, you know, sunlight, what you eat, how much you exercise, like so many different carcinogens in the plastic water bottles, and just there's tons of things. And then there's also inherited mutations that give you a predisposition for cancer. So mm-hmm. it could be, you know, a combination of things, you know, or it could just be random. It could just be random mutations that, you know, one cell gets these and then forms a tumor. And
when you say stuff like that, where it, I think the, not to say the common person, but that's what most of us associate. Yeah, that's cancer. Eat better, you know, exercise, all the things you mentioned. But it seems like, well, we'll finally narrow it down. It seems like we want to go, oh, stop eating this, stop drinking this. But is it just ongoing? Is it just a fire that's constantly spreading?
Yeah, I think the thing about it is that people have to die at some point. You know what I mean? So if like we're curing other diseases, you know, you're not going to get a stroke or you're not going to die of heart disease or something. Eventually, your body just wears out. And I think a big part of it, have you ever heard of telomeres?
Telomeres?
Telomere, yeah.
No.
So there's, it's like, like one reason, I guess, cancer can form is you have on your chromosomes, right, that's like the genetic information of your whole body is in these chromosomes in your cells, and they're protected on each tip by these things called telomeres. They kind of like, what's it called? Insulate your DNA. And so over time with replication, as your cells keep dividing, the telomeres get shorter and shorter. And once they get too short, you can get chromosomes that kind of link up together.
Okay.
And then, so those links can cause karyotype differences. So you get aneuploidy or polyploidy, which just means that your cells divide and they take too many chromosomes or too little chromosomes.
They mess up your chromosomes, basically.
I'm watching Katie as you explain this kind of shake
like,
your head a little bit like this.
Stop.
Well, I think she was
too deep.
It felt like you were doing that out of empathy for me. Or maybe people listening, they would go
I don't know.
These things are really hard to... Like, I don't know if I'm going to remember. Well, your chromosomes have some points, and there are these telomeres on it, and they protect your DNA. And beyond, then to me, the jump I would say is, and I think that, like, if you eat too much sugar, it starts attacking the telomeres. I forgot. I wouldn't really understand the splitting or what breaks down the protection.
Well, I guess the point I was just trying to make was that our bodies get old, and when they get old, they start making more mistakes because... I don't know, all of our genetic machinery are kind of breaking down at a certain point. So dying of old age is kind of synonymous with cancer now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like when you said people have to die, I didn't know if you meant necessarily.
We will all. How you start out with death.
It's this dim lighting.
But do you mean that people have to... We have to see how they die to see how cancer attacks them? You don't mean it like that, or you do? Like, they do have to die so
no,
we can
no,
know.
I don't mean it like that. I just mean that we're organisms, right?
Okay,
and every organism, you know, it's a life cycle. Mm-hmm. So
it seems, I think I've talked about this before in some capacity, that like the... almost like bartering with some sort of a creator of sorts and saying, well, you can all die at 65 if you're into that. And people go, that sucks. Like, we don't want to know. And they'd say, well, the only other option is complete randomness.
Yeah.
Which would mean 1-year-olds would be eligible. And the person in the, I'm sure there was a debate if there was this council of people going, oh, that is rough. 1-year-olds? But I want to live past 65. And then the voting committee is all 66. I'm like, yes, we screw those 1-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that's the system we live in now, and we would take it back, or would we? If we could revote and say no one dies until 65, what would you vote on? I think I'd keep
know.
It randomness like it is.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I kind of feel like it'd be nice to know that you're not going to die for 65 years. That might be worth it.
Well, car accidents could still happen.
Oh, okay. So you're not like immortal until you're 60. It's not
that's a good question. I guess if it's death in that... like principle sense, it would be you're gonna live to 65.
That would be kind of nice to know.
Isn't there a movie that just came out where it's like you're wearing a watch for when you meet your partner or whatever?
Timer.
So then your little watch goes out and you're like, oh god, I'm 65 now, like I have to watch watch the road when I cross the street.
In Time. Well, that was a movie a couple years ago. I like the premise of that. I like that guy did Gattaca as well, the director. Ooh. Love Gattaca. And Gattaca, I probably will end up talking about Gattaca a lot.
It's a good movie.
It's great. And it was, I think it's so like forward thinking in that the, you know, the death is going to happen. It's a randomness. It's a chance. But as parents, you could say this, you know, embryo has a really high chance of developing cancer down the road. And this one does not. Mm-hmm. We'll never be able to do that, will we? I mean, like you said, like...
Yes, we will.
Really?
And it's like, I mean, well I just mean, you can, you know, and as soon as I start talking about this, I think of designer babies, which of course is not what I think we should do. But we had someone come and talk at UCI talking about how he thinks in, you know, 20 years, you're going to be able to pick all these, you know, basically pick what you want your baby to have and basically just get rid of all the predispositions to cancer and Alzheimer's. And, you know, there's a lot of diseases linked with genes. So if you can pick the good version of that for your baby, of course, why wouldn't you? But then, of course, it gets sketchy when you start thinking like, oh, and I want them to be tall and blonde and blue eyed or whatever.
But,
you know?
I mean, and there is difficulty in that since there are so many genes involved in one characteristic of you, right?
That's
like
true.
Even just your hair is like six genes, I think.
That's true.
Yeah,
but just that idea of would you, you know, are people going to be okay with choosing? And I think his talk was called The End of Sex because it was kind of like you would pick your, you know, fertilized embryo and pick the one that had the least predisposition to a panel of diseases, whatever we know by then. And
whoa,
I mean,
yeah.
Do you, I'm being around it, being you're kind of on the ground floor of the genetic makeup of humans, the chromosome level, chromosomal, was that what you would say?
That sounds good, yeah.
You know, the chromosomal level, and watching humanity as it gets, even in spite of itself, it tends to generationally get slightly more compassionate, a little bit more progressive, a little more forward thinking, and the trans movement is really big right now, and kids sort of being accepting of different sexualities and overall just kind of gender, you know, associations. And say in the future that having genitals was looked at so archaically, they would be like, oh god, remember we used to have these like things just hanging off
of us?
Why don't we just get rid of them? We'll harvest the eggs and we'll take some samples and then we'll combine them in a lab and we'll have children. I mean, we're moving toward a world kind of like that. And on some level, people would say, yeah, that is probably better. Humanity would be thinned out. I mean, we would remove things like, this kid's going to be born with a heart outside of its body.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get that one out
of
there.
Yeah, let's not use that one. Yeah. Yeah, it's...
How does it feel
exciting to think about? But that also seems really sad that people wouldn't have sex anymore. That seems like an important part of being a human, so...
Yeah, but why? Is it because we do it and we're familiar with it? I mean, if we look ahead to the evolution of humans, is it hard? I mean, that is at least theoretically like a very loose chance that could happen.
So and have people, you ever heard of like when cats get neutered or spayed, they start eating more?
Really?
Yeah. So, well, I don't know if it's true for male cats, but I think it's kind of a trend with female cats. When they get spayed, they start eating more. They get all chubby. And I think it's because they need some vice. No, I'm just kidding.
You looked at it as a vice. I was thinking more that they're just like, I'm out of the game.
I don't need to keep this cat body ready. I don't know. I think it's just an important part of the human experience. And yeah, that might change and we might evolve out of that, but... It seems like fun, and you know,
I really need to read. What is it? Sex at Dawn or whatever. That was a book that came out 3 or 4 years ago, just about like kind of cultural or social or evolutionary psychology and how cave people didn't just bash the woman over the head and drag her out of there. But we associate this lineage of sex as being that. And then it's, and then it moved to this and this and whatever, and wherever it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always been happening and just maybe under different sort of circumstances and or levels of acceptance generally within the public.
Mm-hmm.
But is it great right now? It's still kind of taboo. Like you can't, once it moved to like, say, on regular television, you would have just sex happening nonstop. Would people be like, we're a little desensitized? And maybe that would lead to like, let's get rid of these genitals. They look so stupid.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. I don't know.
Well, that's neither here nor there, but it does kind of tie in, I guess, with cancer is a problem, and it's what a stupid sentence to say, but meaning like in, well, humans are making more of themselves and we're a factory to a certain degree, and it would be like something in the assembly line going, man, every other box of this cereal or the number is climbing. It used to be like one out of every 10,000 boxes. Now mm-hmm. it's every one out of every 1,000 or something is getting something bad in it. The cereal's not edible. It's bad. It's going stale sooner. However you would want to equate it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a problem in our sort of being able to enjoy life. I mean, it's hard to just be like, life's fun and happy. A three-year-old's dying of eye cancer? This is hard to enjoy. This we need to fix this.
Yeah.
So you guys are looking at that problem. Mm-hmm. But really kind of helpless? Or what gives you a positive feeling about it?
I don't think it's helpless so much. I mean, the whole cancer field, we learn so much every single day. And there are a lot of really great clinical trials right now, and people are doing really well, especially like we were talking about this earlier, like some blood cancers are pretty much curable. You just get, what is it? You just transplant.
Blood transfusion.
Yeah, you just get complete whole body blood transplantation. So they take all of your blood out and put somebody else's in, and
they just figured that out? That seems like a starting point.
No, we've been using blood transfusions for a long time, but I think maybe for this particular kind. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and another thing about cancer is people think of it as one thing, but it's more like a collection of diseases. So it can occur in different tissues, which everyone knows, but even within a tumor, there can be different mutations and a whole bunch of mutations and different mutations within the same tumor. So
so
you're
kind
not
of like,
dealing, I mean, if you cut it open and looked at it, how would you even identify that?
Well, it looks, so if you look at, I study breast cancer and specifically, and if you look at breast tissue, it's very fatty, obviously, mm-hmm. But so it's not very dense. And then if you were to look at like a slide of a breast that had a tumor, the tumor is like very dense. And if you stain it, it's called H&E staining. So it turns the cells blue and like purple and pink, and so you see like really dense blue right where the tumor is, and so you know that that's what it is. But I was getting to a point with this.
I don't know.
Does the purple and pink have anything to do with the ribbons? Is pink just like, oh, girls like pink, or is it more like,
let's make
science.
This pink? No, I think that was around before the pink ribbons. But
so you, well, what started that was, now my brain's tracking a little better, is we were kind of talking about how, like, if you looked at one type of tumor, it would have multiple variations within it.
So there are some cases where, like, if you look at a tumor, if you, like, take a biopsy of it, which is just you stick, like, a little hollow needle in and you take a piece of it, and you look at the genetic mutations within that biopsy, sometimes if you go into a different part in the tumor, multiple places in the tumor, say, like, five or six, as you keep increasing the number of biopsies, you keep increasing the differences in genetic variation. So it seems like the tumor is completely heterogeneous. So, like the population of cells that you initially pick, they're like a certain, like a tumor that was caused for one reason, and then you look at its neighbors and they were a tumor caused for a different reason or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So but if it's natural tissue, it's always going to read the exact same. It's not heterogeneous in any way.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So is it just, I mean, is it heterogeneous to an extent that it's like sand, where over time it's like, well, that's each kind of different, maybe pebble or particle is different, but it's the composite is, we know it's this type of tumor.
Yeah. So the trouble is that, so say you know it's breast cancer, and then there are targeted treatments for breast cancer because it's a secondary sex organ, right? So it expresses hormone receptors and everything, like estrogen, progesterone. So you can target those receptors, but then if it becomes, there are arguments, I guess, to say that it's so heterogeneous that maybe a portion of the tumor doesn't express those receptors anymore. So that's where the idea of tumor heterogeneity comes in, where we kind of think we need, like HIV treatment, we need to attack it from multiple different sides, mm-hmm. so that we can kind of get all of the different tumor types in that one breast tumor. We can kill them all in different ways.
And
you know what I mean?
Does that get to just, again, like a fire that's just spreading relentlessly, does it get to be, I mean, cancer not only on its own is difficult to figure out how it's being made, mm-hmm. but then when you get to a point where, like, all right, we can head this off, but we need 40 different treatments, or we need to kind of head off every single one of these. That's got to be nearly impossible.
It's usually not that many, but I think what's interesting is going to be, especially with being able to sequence whole genomes and like sequence a whole tumor, you know, multiple biopsies in one tumor, is that we're heading towards personalized medicine. So, you know, everyone's tumor is different. Let's see what your tumor, what mutations your tumor has, and what drugs we have for those, and treat it based on the genetics of your tumor.
Wow.
I think they're already starting to do that a little bit, where they sequence a tumor and they target exactly the mutations that are in there. And so I think that's where we're heading also with cancer treatment. And so, yeah. And I think back to your point before, it's like we see progress, you know, we learn a lot every day. And okay. On one hand, it's scary because we learn how crazy and complicated and messed up tumors are and cancer is. But we also know a lot of great people working on, you know, all the different kinds of cancers, all the different mutations within those cancers. And, you know, and we're seeing progress with treatment. And yeah, so it's kind of a mix of, you know, being scared of tumors, but also in awe of them, and then also being hopeful because we're seeing the treatments. But
yeah, and it's not even just, I guess. Oh, sorry. It's not even that we're seeing like more people being cured, but their quality of life is better now.
Yeah,
you know, it used to be really horrible, or you're on chemotherapy, and I guess it still is that way, and you're not doing very well, like barfing and everything. But now we can really like extend people's lives, and it's a quality life, you know. It's not just that they're sick. And
yeah.
Not having to have that sort of dilemma of do treatment that'll nearly kill you, or just ride it out kind of as you are, but know that there's nothing to help you. You're saying that now we can treat them and they can leave and go, you know, hang out with their friends, but be receiving treatment?
Yeah, I think the treatments are getting better.
Yeah.
And that's not for every type of cancer, you know, by any means, but you know, all these people doing the basic research helps the treatments. And yeah, and so
when you talked about like personalized treatments and like projecting to the future, and say we had like quantum computing figured out, or supercomputing to where we could, you know, figure out your exact genome and what you're susceptible to, and here's how we would head off those things and your receptors, or I don't know how they would do it.
Yeah, exactly.
But is that us winning the game? And if it is, say, a game, does it make sense to you that the reason cancer is growing, like, percentage-wise, maybe, whereas, you know, in India they don't really have colon cancer? It's probably what we eat and the things we put into our bodies. It's not like some evil plan setting place where, you know, like Sim City, where you start playing and they're just like, the longer you ignore things, they start to crop up. Like, they're ignoring cancer. And it's just, it's not like that. It's things we're doing that we're unaware of. Like you said, like the plastic in water bottles, or fracking and things under the earth. And I mean, you see these clusters, they make sense that, oh, they were drinking groundwater that was rotten or tainted or had chemical waste in it. So anyway, that being a game, you think that would be a reasonable thing down the road, where we could identify personally for you, here's your life, here's your genetic makeup, and here's what we need to do to stop you?
Yeah, that is where it's headed. There's a lot of work being done right now, like the Cancer Genome Atlas and stuff, where we're trying to see like whole sequence genomes of cancers, and then you can kind of get a better idea of how to do that, give people more personalized care. And it's this thing called Oncotype DX, I think, is like they can screen you for like 1,000 genes and see like which ones are mutated, and then based on that, kind of go from there with therapy.
Oh, wow. The amount of money we raise and put into cancer research, and are we gaining on it? Are we learning more? Like things like that. That's incredible that we would kind of learn those things, that we would know more about cancer and feel. Do you start to get, when you're looking at something and going, this cancer is mutated in the last few days, or this cancer is, it's just going to always be ahead of us. How do you factor that in? How do you deal with that?
I think just cutting it down into smaller, you know,
manageable problems.
Yeah, manageable problems where we can go from. But I think, yeah, as we learn more and more about cancer, like I said, we learn how complex it is. So then we go from saying, oh, we're going to cure cancer, to like, okay, we're going to figure out what this protein does, and when it mutates, why it's causing this tumor, and figure out if we can inhibit it or whatever, you know, find a drug that'll target that and then see if that works in mice and then see if it works in humans and all these steps.
Oh.
Everything could go, you know, just, you know, something like there are tons of drugs where, oh, this targets this mutated thing. Perfect. We're going to cure cancer. And then they try it in mice. It looks great. And then they try it in humans and it doesn't work. There's no difference between the placebo group. So I think there's always going to be mysteries and there's always going to be problems, but I think it's interesting to learn about them and try to help in some small way.
Yeah, and with it being little brush fires, I have so many questions about, like, how do they determine, you know, what stage it is at?
That might be a little, I mean, you might know more about that. We're kind of the basic research, like the molecular biology, like what the mutation's doing.
All so, the staging, though, is just, like, looking at it.
And I think it depends on the type.
It's sorcery.
Like, yeah.
Is it, I mean, is it kind of binary? Is it a yes or no? Is it, or is there a gray area where you look at a biopsy? And because, I mean, they take them. They go,
there's always a gray area.
There's a little bit of, like,
but
it
again,
could be cancer.
Yeah. That's not, you know, we don't do that's anything with
level.
People.
Okay.
And
how many different types of cancers are you looking at? And what are you experimenting on to find them?
So being PhD students, we have very tiny focuses. Yeah. And so it's just like a little niche, right, in the bigger picture. So I
and that's all scientists have, you know, their particular little piece of
we're like
the
experts
puzzle.
On one thing.
One little tiny thing that takes, you know, 20 minutes to explain. Like,
is there like a large, you know, Google document or something, or like a database? Where, you know, the old thing was, you know, if you had a doctor and then you went to a different state, they'd have to get your charts and transfer all your... And now that there's kind of like a network or things like that. Are you communicating
with
other researchers?
Yeah, so that's why we get to go to conferences. There are conferences for everything from just general cancer conferences to, you know, BRCA in breast cancer conferences. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that's how we can really network and you meet people.
That must
in
be
your
so
field.
Weird to be at one of those breast conferences that are like for subgroup 134.7.
There could be like 50 people there that are all the people that like really work on that, and nobody else would
about that one area.
If I went, I would be like, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, but there are also, thanks to the internet, massive online databases now that have so much information about different types of cancer and clinical data from across the country and the world. And so it is really easy, just like the click of a button, to figure out like what the trends are in certain types of cancer and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you read scientific articles in your field and then you start recognizing names and then you go to a conference and you meet someone. And yeah, I think it's the same as any other kind of field. You just kind of end up networking.
And what,
just a little more nerdy.
Got you into it? I mean, what did you have terrible things happen in your life? Are you just genuinely wanting to be good people? Did you do something terrible and you're trying to atone for it?
I don't want to be a spider in the next life.
That's funny because I've been thinking about how, I mean, I just always loved like animals and biology. And then when I took my first cell biology class, I was like, yes, this is crazy that in the 30 trillion cells in our body, they're all expressing DNA differently and like all these like it's so complicated what's going on in every single cell of your body. And it's just crazy. It blows my mind. So that's kind of what led me to biology. But then when I started working on lung cancer, I kind of thought it was interesting and maybe a little bit of karma because my grandfather, who I love and was great, was a businessman. He was like a tobacco distributor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know if they necessarily knew how bad it was for people, but he was, you know, peddling cigarettes. And now here I am, you know, 50 years later studying lung cancer. So I wonder if it's a little bit of like familial karma.
Yeah, evening the score.
Yeah.
How do you deal with, and I'll go to you first, Katie, since you were talking about that, with loving that there are a trillion things happening in each individual cell, of which in our bodies there is an insane amount. The idea of harnessing that and having it all in, or you must not be, are you a very organized and regimented person, or would that drive you insane? Because you're never going to have it under control. Like when you watch.
I'm never going to know everything. Is that what you mean? Or
yeah, I mean, the
yes,
idea of monitoring this organism and just like, all right, everything's checking out. No, what? Hey, there's cancer happening in that cell. Mm-hmm. Not on my watch. I mean, that's.
Oh, see, I don't have to deal with organisms. I've got a dish and an incubator with cancer cells in them. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's all I have to worry about. So I, okay, you know, I put some RNA in there or microRNA in there and I see what happens. That's a lot of what cell biologists do. You have cells, you squirt something on there and you see what happens.
It's very reductionist.
Yeah.
But in the case of an organism where there is like that one in a trillion cell that starts over proliferating or something, initially there is a really great immune response from your body, so it can get rid of those cells, like eat them, macrophages.
Because I was going to say, with, you know, you rarely hear that person has stage one cancer. It's always kind of like, ugh, it's stage three, yeah, four. And do a lot of times when people, I wonder if I've cycled cancer through my system.
Yeah.
Probably, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we've all had.
It's a natural part of cancer, the proliferation that, yeah, process. Especially in like organs like your intestines, you know, like colon cancer is, if you think about it, it seems like a very likely cancer to get, because the colon tissue is constantly cycling and it's constantly proliferating. So the more proliferation, which is just the more cells dividing, the more chance there is to get a bad cell.
Right.
You know? But then, yeah, there is the initial, like, your body is like, no, not now. But so once you get too many of them, the cancer kind of outsmarts your body and it takes the immune cells, you know, if your body wants to have an immune response to it, but it kind of turns it, I guess, against itself and for the tumor, so that it's like, yes, it like that, help me grow. So there is a very weird seesaw.
Yeah, your cells.
Like, not that it tricks it, but it just works. That's what we think of cancer as, like,
it does trick
host.
It. It sends out signals like, oh, I'm your friend. You know, like,
really? You want to help me, don't you?
Oh, that's such a gross way to think that if I got cancer, I'd be like, I got tricked.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is kind of, and it's very weird, you know, like, once, I guess I'm just going to stay on that thing with the immune with the immune cell response, but it can trick them, yeah, to help them, and it can help them move, and it can help them grow, and it's just like this very weird.
Yeah, tumors also will co-opt your blood vessels, so it'll have blood vessels start growing towards it to feed it. You know, it needs to be fed by blood. So it sends out signals to be like, come
so
grow over here.
So it is something. I mean, it's not sentient. It's not. What do you think it is?
It's you, though. It's your own cells.
But why would your own, your other cells don't do that.
It is just like a really perfect example of Darwinian evolution. Because
but
it is
not,
trial
though,
and error. Because
it kills the host. I mean, well, I guess we would do that with the planet,
itself.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It is very weird because the tumor cell, you know, it's not part of your body anymore. It doesn't want to play its role that it's supposed to. And so it just goes out on its own. And then it's evolving from day one. Once it gets its first mutation, it keeps evolving. And so its evolution isn't to help the organism, it's to help itself, because it is in itself like its own organism now.
I've never thought about it that way, though, that it becomes its own thing and like inside of you. I always just think of it as like your own cells that just go bad. And
I think I have a tendency to like anthropomorphize things.
Anthropomorphize tumors?
Yeah, this cancer thing's like, I got a nice little place here.
It does seem like that, though. Especially like you can watch them move on a plate and you're like, you're a thing, you're thinking. We're
so do you start to, you're studying it, it's an opponent, do you start to not respect it but kind of go, well, you're wily,
like, Heather has very,
we were talking about this earlier too. I do, like, I want to preface this by saying I don't wish cancer on anybody. It's horrible. I wouldn't like to get it myself.
You're working to cure it, so I don't think you need to have any qualifiers.
But working with it, I'm not working with it, working on it.
Working against
it, yeah. I know it's so weird because you grow the cells in your plate and you're like, really don't want them to die, but, you know,
but in
the
plate,
someone, you want your experiments to work. But yeah, it is kind of like beautiful in a sense. I don't want to offend anybody by saying that.
Yeah, well, it's impossible not to. I mean, but if someone has made it this far in with a relative or they themselves very ill with cancer, I mean, that's a strange sort of...
The children without genitals probably turned them off a long time ago.
What's beautiful about it, though?
Just like the evolution, like a tumor just... It really is evolving and it's always changing. And there's attrition, you know, when it acquires a mutation that's not beneficial, those cells will die. And
so it makes a mistake?
Mm-hmm.
I should have never brought you on board.
Fool!
Does it know where it wants to go, or is it just kind of taking a shape and going, this will work?
No, it's all stochastic. It's all random. So it's just like every division, it can acquire more mutations. And that's, like I said before, because of the caps of the chromosomes, right? Telomeres are getting shorter. Yeah. Things keep moving around, but I guess in a certain stage in cancer, they are able to put telomeres back on the DNA to kind of like save the mutations that they made. You know,
so they like are a computer the ones drive. That cancer cells basically turn back on the enzyme that
puts the telomeres on telomeres. There. So it's made all these mutations, and it's like, yeah. I want
feels
these to
smart.
Stay.
I mean, yeah. That feels like such an incredibly intelligent thing to do, like weakening the...
It's crazy.
Ah, man, that's
yeah,
crazy.
All the, so we call them the hallmarks of cancer. There was like a seminal paper in like 2000.
And then another one about, in 2011.
Yeah, but it basically... The hallmarks of cancer, one of them is enabling immortality, so they turn on telomerase, which extends telomeres to help the cell keep growing. Another one that's crazy to me is they just send themselves growth signals. So all these signals that you're usually getting from the blood or from other cells, they just turn them on inside themselves and just say, yep, now we can keep growing forever.
Yeah.
And none of these things would make us rethink how we... I constantly... like, we look at brain scans, we look at brain activity, the idea of thought. We would... how do we look at something like that and go, it's the equivalent of like a spy movie where it's gotten inside... they've breached the perimeter. Sir, they're inside. I don't know how they're doing it. It feels like that. Like there's a very specific directive, and cancer knows what it's doing, and it's gone as a ghost and gotten inside the whatever, you know, the impenetrable defense walls, and then it's turned on its own signal. Mm-hmm. I mean, how does it do that? How does it do that if it's just... I don't even know what. How would you describe it? What if it's you? It's mm-hmm. your genetics.
It's you mutated.
Yeah, it's
gotta
yeah,
be
it
kind
is.
Of proud of myself. If I did that.
It.
That's unreal.
Really impressive.
Yeah, and it is really weird when you think about it too, because there are so many genes that you could mutate in your body. There's only over 20,000 genes in a human body, right? Mm-hmm. And then in like 90% of cancers, there are like these same three mutations or same four mutations that were kind of grandfather mutations that pushed it into malignancy, right? And you're like, out of all of the genes in your body, these cancers seem to have the same ones.
With Darwinian evolution, how have those three not been sort of wiped away? That seems crazy.
They have function in your normal tissue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so your body needs them.
When they're normal.
When they're not oncogenes, when they're just normal genes.
Mm-hmm. And also sometimes, even if you inherit a mutation, it can take 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, you know. So people already have kids by then, and just in the terms of like evolution, you know, you've already passed on that gene. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of sad to think about, but
in the case of breast cancer, if it is a BRCA mutation, BRCA mutations are very common in breast cancer. But you can just like a lot of people, like Angelina Jolie, just cut her boobs off.
Yeah,
and she found that out she had it.
That's really only beneficial for people with those kinds of mutations. If you don't have a BRCA mutation, if you're out there and you have breast cancer, you don't need a double mastectomy.
Yeah.
Wait, so she didn't need to do that?
Had a BRCA mutation.
She did.
It was
good
that she did that.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's the closest we are right now to studying the embryo and determining it well ahead of the development of the fetus at all. Mm-hmm. Is later, much mm-hmm. later, when it's a fully formed human, going, you can cut them off. But that came from studying her genetics and looking mm-hmm. and saying, you have, what is it, BRCA.
Yeah, it's BRCA. People just say BRCA.
BRCA mutation.
Yeah.
How long have we known about that? Have we known how to say, like, this is a type of mutation you have?
We've known about it for quite a while. I want to say it was like, so HeLa cells were 50s.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably around like 60s or 70s, right? That we knew that it was a thing.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I'm just bullshitting at this point. Are you allowed to guess?
Sure, yeah. Use whatever language you need.
I'm not sure. It was probably in the last, 30 years. Yeah.
All right, we got to the bottom of it. I could look it up, but let's not do that.
No.
People
but
can look
like
that up on
that's like the basis of our field is like after people kind of figured out the structure of DNA and what it's doing, then you can start linking genes to disease. So like Huntington's, I think, was the first... cystic fibrosis, like different kinds of cancer. And that's kind of where our field has come from.
How would you feel if you, something wasn't right, or you went and you, would you know intuitively, like, this is my old friend, the enemy is in me. I mean, how would you feel? Would you just kind of go, it's a lottery? And like you were saying before, like you have children before kind of the chances are really high that you will get cancer or have any number of other ailments, you're introducing something to essentially say, now it's your turn to run from all these perils in life. And hopefully in the end, you'll make it through. But when do you think like your number's just going to get called, or you feel like the chances are still pretty slim?
Yeah, we were talking about this too. I had like this lump on my arm that turned out to be just some weird pus, but I ended up at an oncologist and they thought it was that. And I think it's because I think we might know too much about it, because we know how, you know, the depths of how just crazy cancer can be.
So you knew straight away, like,
I was so fatalistic. I was like, no, I was like, if this is a tumor, like,
I had a good life.
Yeah, it was great, a great run, but yeah, my old nemesis is here to kill me. And yeah, I don't know. I was I don't think like, I would handle it well.
I don't think I'm a hypochondriac, but you're not a hypochondriac, it doesn't sound like, but do you immediately turn that page, like, well, I had a good run, just kind of, there is definitively something here, mm-hmm. and this is probably, I know what it is.
It's like when you take a psychology class and you start tapping your pen, you're like, I have OCD.
Yeah, you start thinking you have everything. No, for this, I was just, once I got to the oncologist and they were like, okay, it looks like, you know, on the ultrasound or whatever, it looks like a tumor, so we're gonna go in there and get a biopsy. And like, as soon as they said that, I was just like, I know this, you know, I know what this is. And yeah,
did you tell them your background?
No,
I can do this biopsy.
Yeah.
Why not just do that in the lab?
We can't do biopsies.
It's too scary. I mean, yeah, first of all, it's probably completely against like,
oh, I'd be biopsying everything all the time. You got access to it?
I don't know about biopsies, but I do feel like sometimes, because we have access to liquid nitrogen, I think some people probably do store their sperm for later use.
Really?
Some people.
Scientists do weird things when you have access to like a laboratory.
Yeah.
I had an old boss that would get liquid nitrogen to take home to like freeze the moles off of his wife or something, or warts or something,
or make ice cream with.
Here you go.
I read this thing about this is totally different, but you know, bacteria being essential to us, and especially mm-hmm. like our immune system, and your pheromones are oddly like a combination of your sweat mixed with the bacteria on your skin, and they send a signal to someone walking over that essentially tells them how healthy you are. Like, this person's never going to get sick.
Yeah.
And they can perceptively pick up on that. But this guy who was studying it was like, I think kids nowadays are having more allergies to things like peanuts and what have you, because more like via cesarean, or the when you're doused with vaginal bacteria,
mm-hmm.
you're it's like going through the powder coating wash at a car dealership, like that thing's safe. And so his wife had to have an emergency C-section, and he took some gauze and swabbed her and wiped the kid down with it. And I, like, scientists must do crazy things like that. You're seeing stuff in the lab.
Yeah.
You're there firsthand. I mean, because people aren't going to be like throwing salt over their shoulder to ward off cancer. But mm-hmm. what do they do aside from just eating differently or better, I guess, to quote unquote that?
Actually, I don't know. Yeah, there are a lot of people I know that eat well and exercise a lot and put sunscreen on, and you know, but there are a lot of grad students I know that have horrible diets and don't sleep enough.
Highly stressed.
Yeah.
I don't know that it always translates over to the, you know, we're in the nitty gritty of it.
Yeah, even because you study it, and like I said earlier, we study such a small portion of it, so you kind of become removed from the actual problem.
Yeah.
And you're just interested in this one tiny mechanism that nobody else cares about. So you forget about, oh yeah, I'm studying cancer, and a way that I can stop myself from getting melanoma is by putting sunscreen on when I go outside.
Mm-hmm.
But I have this sunburn.
Does that scare you if you get, you know, I mean, no one would make fun of you, but you're as close as you can get to that happening. Like, you get cancer and people are like, you, come on, how do you let this happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just like anything else.
How are you liking the beer, you guys? We've managed to keep quite a rough topic to talk about. Have a certain amount of levity. I feel like mm-hmm. this is informative, and let's chat more about it, but let's take a real quick break, and then we'll come back with more cancer talk. All right, aren't they great? Katie and Heather, so fun to talk to them. Really enjoyed
what they had to say. And again, it's a bit of a touchy subject, but I hope everyone enjoyed that and made it through and feels a little better about it, or a little more aware of what it is and what we're kind of learning about cancer. That I hope you're having a good end of the year. Hope the holidays are going well. It's nice to be back in Los Angeles, and we'll get back on track with putting the show out a little bit more conveniently than when I was traveling a lot. So if you're on iTunes, subscribe to the show. Thanks for rating it and supporting it and all that stuff. And if you want to donate and join Nicholas, that would be awesome too. It's really helpful. I have albums on iTunes if you're there as well. Hello Robot, Humanitis, and Explosion Land. And then I have a new DVD out also called One-Headed Beast, which... if you go to my website, davidhunsberger.com, there is probably something, some sort of holiday deal to get the DVD and maybe a CD or some sort of special. I always have like some sort of holiday special. Thespacecave.com might have something about that as well. If you'd like to call in or be called space_cave on Twitter, and mine is Huntsberger Junk on Twitter. All right, that is enough plugs. The next Junk show is December 13th. Had to slip one more plug in there. If you live in LA, come out. It is a fun show. Great lineup. Animation, music, comedy, all kinds of fun artistic genres represented there. And that's about it. So let's get out of here. Thanks for listening. Here is another song from the album Noah's Ark by Matthew Robbins, who helped with One-Headed Beast and also was on the London Junk Show. And this song is called Are We Alone? There's a link on the website if you'd like to purchase this album. It's really great, and I think you'll like it. So here it is, Are We Alone from Matthew Robbins off of Noah's Ark. Thanks for stopping by the Space Cave.
Is Mars made of stone? Is Pluto quite dry and airless? Is Venus watching with microbe eyes? Or does she just sit around careless as a lump of ice? If we seal a jar of grain with a stained shirt, does the grain turn into mice? Things grow where they are needed. Everybody must grow something. Everything grows if you feed it. Butterflies, tumors, herbs, and bone. We are not alone. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Tim Spooner.